Welcome from Las Vegas, Nevada, the host city of NAB 2014. We're here on the 45th floor of the Trump International Hotel. This is Cinema 5D on the Couch, presented by B&H, the professional's source, Vitech Videocom, Tools on Air, and Zeiss.
Welcome to episode 3 of Cinema 5D on the Couch. Today we're here with one of our dear sponsors, Zeiss. This is Michael Schielen. He's the sales director of the camera lens division. This is Dr. Aurelien Dodok. He's Zeiss's principal scientist of the lens division. And this is Barry Anderson. He's a well-known filmmaker and author of the DSLR Filmmaker's Handbook. To start this off, let's talk a little bit about Zeiss in general. What kind of company is it, and how did you get back into the game of making cinema lenses?
Carl Zeiss is a Germany-based optical company specialized in optics. The company was founded 1846 in Jena. And today the headquarters are based in Oberkochen, which is in the western part of Germany, close to Stuttgart. The camera lens division in which we are in is specialized, obviously, in the camera lenses and also still in motion picture lenses. The first lenses were developed in the beginning of the 19th century. We have started with Ultra Primes again in 1999, followed by the Master Prime line in 2005, and in 2010 we developed a new line of compact prime lenses.
So I guess it's a quite small division within this big company,
a
very popular one, I guess.
It's true, it's a very small division. Compared to huge divisions like a semiconductor industry market or medical instruments, instruments for industrial measurement tools. Obviously the branding part of our division, the brand awareness through our lenses is very high.
Mm-hmm. What about the CP2s? I mean, I think with those you managed to have a huge success over the past few years. I mean, they were, I think, the first cinema lenses to be marketed to, and also the price range-wise, to DSLR filmmakers stepping up and getting more professional, you know, to trying to get a more cinematic look and a professional cinema workflow for an affordable price. When did you introduce them, and how did they, were they accepted by the market?
I mean, it all started with the launch of the Canon 5D Mark II and let's say a new trend of HD SLR. And in the beginning, the filmmakers, they used traditional still picture lenses, and they recognized pretty early that there is a huge drawback, I mean, disadvantage in using autofocus lenses on this camera. So what we did, we used our still picture lenses, and we developed this new line of compact prime lenses in 2010, which means we added a CineStyle housing with CineStyle ergonomics, very precise focusing through a 300 degree focus rotation. We have standard dimensions, so the filmmaker can swap the lenses quickly on the set. If you rigged it up, we have manual aperture control, many additional benefits for the user compared to still picture lenses.
Mm-hmm. But they use the same interiors as the
right. We use the same interiors. Mm-hmm. This is also one parameter or one fact that we were able to produce these lenses for relatively, or let's say, economic way. So we have an affordable solution, and the best advantage actually is that these lenses can have a high flexibility, so our customers can swap the mount. It's not an adapter, we're talking about the real mount from PL to EF, F, Micro Four Thirds, or even E mount mm-hmm. for Sony cameras.
That makes them also very versatile for rental.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So we think 50% of these lenses, which we have sold in the last 4.5 years, goes into rental houses, and 50% to owner operators.
Yeah, that's good, because you don't want to be locked into the camera system when you buy lenses. I mean,
right.
Because I always say, when people ask me to buy lens, for recommendation for lenses, many people made the mistake and bought the stills lenses in the beginning, and they are now locked into one system depending on the manufacturer, and they can't really change their camera system easily, even
right.
though they may want to.
And yeah, we still have these still picture lenses,
yeah.
ZE and ZF2 mount for Canon and Nikon cameras, and they're still a very good option for younger filmmakers mm-hmm. who cannot afford a CP2 lens yet. But as you said, it's also a way to step up
yeah.
to next level. And thanks to this full frame coverage, so 24x36mm format, they are really a future proof solution. If you think of the Sony announcement these days at NAB here in Las Vegas, Sony announced A7S camera.
Yes, yeah.
Full frame camera, there are not so many lenses,
yeah.
CineStyle lenses, which can cover this sensor.
Yeah, they are an investment. They stay with you for your entire career,
right.
whereas the camera will be swapped within a few years because it's obsolete, right?
True.
Yeah. So where do you actually manufacture the CP2s and the new compact zooms as well?
Yeah, all CineStyle lenses are manufactured in Germany, in Oberkochen, in a small village. Again, close
and
to
everybody works for Zeiss there, I guess.
Everybody works for Zeiss there. We have 6,000 inhabitants and basically 6,000 people working
okay.
for Zeiss in this village.
Even the children and everyone.
Yeah.
So, you have these new compact zooms. Can you tell us a little bit about them? What's special about them? Do they also cover is it also full frame, I think?
Yes, they cover.
And who do you think is the target group for these lenses?
Okay, other than the compact primes, these lenses are not coming from a still picture lens. These lenses are a complete new design, optically and mechanically. So our target is, first of all, to give our customers of the CP2 lens line the possibility to work with zooms, a real CineStyle zoom. And secondly, it's also it's also an option for all other customers we have in, coming from the Master Prime and Ultra Prime motion picture, high-end motion picture, to use zooms in their work. So we think it's a good lens line to use for features, for ENG style applications, 4K, sports, whenever you need a fast solution where you don't have the time to and money. To swap a lot of prime lenses.
Okay.
And yeah, the advantage also of this lens line is compared to others in the market, it covers the full frame, again, full frame sensor, 24x36mm. So this is actually a unique feature we have compared to any other zoom manufacturer in the market.
And compared to the still zooms, what do you think are the advantages? Apart from the focus through and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think the main advantage is that in motion picture, compared to still picture, a picture should not breathe. I mean, this is one big advantage. So when you change the angle of view, the picture, it's on the one hand side, we have a zoom shift issue with still picture lenses. So if you focus to a certain person or objective, this focus point should stay where it was placed when you change the angle of view, when you zoom in and out.
So yeah, with some stills lenses, you see when you change the focus,
yeah.
Prime lenses for stills cameras,
yeah,
because they are made for stills,
yeah.
It doesn't matter that the angle changes a little bit when you focus, but that is not acceptable for video work.
Right.
Because
right.
you don't want to. You even see it sometimes in feature films, and I always wonder why they don't correct it, to be honest. Yeah.
And breathing is the other topic.
Yeah.
So when you focus, when you change the focus, the picture should not breathe. Mm-hmm. I mean, it should stay as it is and not bring into the picture new elements, which the filmmaker doesn't want to show.
Yeah. Aurelien, you are the chief scientist, so you know everything about all these lenses. We, you know, are all creative people. We don't know the technical stuff behind it, but we just use it and we say that it's either good or bad and are happy with it or we're not. the bokeh is something which is very important to us filmmakers. We always are after something like the filmic look and, you know, creamy, out of focus highlights and stuff like that. Zeiss like is very famous for a special bokeh. You can see that a lens is more cinematic when it looks a certain way. There are different ways, but you can see the difference. What influences bokeh and how can you develop this?
So we have to make some separations here in the lens landscape. The most lenses we have, and we are talking now about the zooms, about the compact zooms and the compact primes. These lenses are made in such a way to have a neutral image. So you cannot, it was our goal to make an image almost perfect. So not to have special features in the image, making the image to have some kind of look. We made these lenses having a certain personality, so that the artist has the freedom to style the image as he wanted. This was the goal with this compact primes and compact zooms, so to make a perfect image with a high resolution and a very good contrast, neutral in colors, so to be very to make the picture as the object is.
Mm-hmm. So Zeiss is always about having a very neutral image, but as sharp as possible.
As sharp as possible. We're using this philosophy with our compact primes and the master primes or the ultra primes. It's something very different with the master anamorphic. With the master anamorphic, we have had the goal to make a lens with a very special background, with a very, very special. But I think we are going to talk about this issue.
We're going
later
to talk
on.
About the anamorphics
okay,
later,
okay.
On. Yeah,
yeah. Later on.
Yeah. So the as we said, it's a very the Zeiss lenses are known for very high sharpness and a neutral look. And I think also some other manufacturers, you know, you can recognize them more easily maybe because they built in the look into the lenses, I think. But Zeiss has a different philosophy.
Yes, we want to make a lens with a very good image. Mm-hmm. As I said, want to give the artist the chance to change this image after his wishes. If you have a perfect image, you can change it. You can make it as you wish. If you have a bad image, you will never get a good image because information is missing from the object.
So it's comparable to cameras where we have, very like S-log from the Sony cameras, which is as neutral as possible, so you can add everything in post as you want.
Yes.
But if you shoot with a picture profile, you're like set. It might look good on the surface, but you can't change it anymore.
Yes, you can't change it anymore, and you cannot improve it. You need very special techniques to try to improve contrast or resolution. But you do not have any more information from the object, so everything is only calculated. It's not from the object.
All the Zeiss compact primes and also the compact zooms have a very large image circle that they cover. So they all cover a full frame stills camera, which is also became popular in the video world with the 5D Mark II. Yep. Are there any disadvantages that you do that? Because many other manufacturers, they focus on the super 35 millimeter image circle.
So it was our intention from the very beginning to make the lenses this compact prime series, to make it to make them covering the full frame. And on the same time, not to be larger than the similar zooms covering the Academy format. We have done this with a lot of innovation. We have a very robust design and very, very compact in size. If you compare it with a similar from our main competitors, you will see we have quite similar sizes there, but covering a full frame format, and this is 1.5 more radius, image radius, or two times more surface, image surface we have to cover.
And when you use one of the compact primes or compact zooms on a super 35 millimeter sensor, that probably also means you don't have as much distortion at the borders, because the image circle is bigger, right?
The image circle is bigger, so you are using the core surface of image, mm-hmm. and there the image is very, very, very good. So it is the core surface of the image. It's quite smaller. The super 35 millimeter format is quite smaller. So we use only this central area from the capability of the lens, and you will get a very, very good image.
Yeah. We also call it the fillet or sweet spot effect. So when you just
it's the very best part of the image.
Yeah. But I think it's not only the sensor size. If you look at the trends in the camera market, yes, there are cameras with a larger sensor size, like the Canon 1DC, Mark III, or the Nikon D800. But there are also cameras like the Sony F65. They use a smaller, or the S35mm, super 35mm sensor format, but they use smaller pixel sizes. So more pixels, higher pixel density. And I think also for this, correct me if I'm wrong, but for this, for these cameras, we need lenses which can resolve these small pixels.
Yeah,
and,
fully right.
And I think this is also one approach we take with these compact prime and zoom lenses.
You also have a new, I mean, this is not a cinema lens, but you also have a new 55 millimeter lens, which is super sharp, especially made for the D800, right?
Right. It's actually, it's not really made for the D800. 3 years ago, when we started to think about this lens, we had the idea to come up with a non-compromised lens, with a lens which does not have any image errors, I would say. So no chromatic aberration, no distortion, no color fringes, all everything you know from an image which is not perfect. So we wanted to have a perfect image, and we wanted to use this lens also as a brand shaper. But the feedback, the response from the market is incredible.
So now I guess you have a lot of filmmakers wanting this lens, right?
Also, yes. The people asking for this lens. Also yesterday at the show, people were coming to the booth and asking when they can expect a CineStar lens of the O2S lens. So the feedback is great. We're happy. The lens has exceeded our expectations for this for this year. And we are expanding this lens range. So there will be an 85 millimeter lens.
And are you thinking about the cinema style version of it?
I mean, never say never, but so far today we have so many projects in line.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you a date for such a project. So
Barry, you are an experienced filmmaker and you know a lot of the DSLR landscape from the very beginning as well. Do you think there is a typical Zeiss look, because you're quite experienced with Zeiss lenses, or?
I would have to say I would agree that when I've chosen, you know, CB2s or the ZF versions, I like them because of the fact that, you know, I have a lot of vintage lenses. I use them to kind of burn a unique look to it. But on a lot of projects, I want what we'd call like a blank canvas. I want white. And I can paint everything on there I want. And Zeiss is, you know, they give me such a good-looking image that allows me to kind of, you know, light and create and art direct within the frame and let that stand on its own. So I don't notice a look of Zeiss per se. But what I do notice a lot of times when I see projects that I'm in love with, it turns out that they were shot on Zeiss. Mm. So I'd say that's probably a more accurate representation than a given look.
What's your favorite lens?
In which line? That's a good one. I would say I'm in love from the still line. I love the 15 millimeter. I like shooting wide angle, and most wide angles I work with have a lot of distortion, but mm-hmm. at 6 feet you have straight lines, super sharp image, it's beautiful. I also think that from the CP2s, it's hard to decide between the super speeds, yeah. but I really love the 135. I like, you know, compressing things a little bit and having, you know, having that image really pull out what I want to show and let everything kind of drop off in the background. So
yeah, for me it's the 85. It's the perfect portrait lens.
I'm typical. You know, give me 12 lenses, I'll give you reasons why I like them all.
So what kind of stuff do you shoot mostly?
I don't think there is a mostly. I've literally done everything. Feature films, you know, commercials, music videos, corporate stuff. I think my specialty, from a directing standpoint, I like working with talent. So coaching talent, delivering talent. But when it comes to the creative side on the cinematography, I think, you know, right now the whole landscape's littered with, you know, everybody can have a camera and they can go shoot. And what I'm finding out is giving me a lot of phone calls of like, geez, we shot that last time, but it looked so good. But what you shoot's really good. Why is that? And, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with it that, you know, the common thing is, oh, these cameras are so fast, lenses are so fast that we don't need the light anymore.
True.
Well, then I love hearing that because I'm like, good, I'm getting a phone call next week. So, you know, a lot of the tried and true filmmaking techniques that I learned shooting 35 millimeter film, suddenly I'm like, well, these didn't go away. They're still here.
Yeah.
And just applying that now to, I don't care what camera, I don't care any of that, because all it's going to take is a good lens, a good sensor, and some good lighting. And, you know.
Well, that's not all. I mean, it's a lot that it takes, you know, in total. But a lot of people starting out think, you know, you just need the newest, best camera.
Yep.
And especially at this NAB, we see craziness about new cameras. Everybody and their mom is releasing a new camera.
Yep.
And, you know, people don't realize that it takes much more to make a good film.
Well, when I you know, have training or talk to people, it's, you know, cameras usually drive all the discussion. And I usually try to kind of push that down, saying a camera is a tool that's very replaceable, like you said earlier. You know, if you're going to spend money on a camera package, I usually tell people about 60% of your budget should go into lenses. Because if you buy good quality lenses, those will stay with you years and years and years beyond whatever camera system. But it's kind of like people have to keep thinking about it. What do I need in a package to shoot? What sort of lights, what sort of lenses, what sort of camera, what sort of support, and build something and appropriately think about it. Because I know a lot of people stretch for like the best, newest camera, and they have no money left over for these other things. So they go, well, I bought a fast lens, I have the newest cameras, and it'll look great.
I usually tell people to buy a cheap camera and a good lens.
Yes, absolutely.
Because when somebody asks me, you know, I have €2,000 budget for a new camera and a lens.
Yep.
And then they ask me, should I buy, you know, the 5D Mark II and add the kit lens?
Yes.
Like, no.
Yeah.
You should probably buy the, I don't know, 650D.
Yes.
And buy a ZF lens, you know, a CF lens. And this is a much better choice because it stays with you forever.
Yeah.
And the camera, no matter which camera it is, it's obsolete in 2 years.
Correct. And I would add to that, if people are out there on the show floor or whatnot, whenever you buy a camera, if it comes with a kit lens, don't buy it. Because that is just throwing money down the tube. I mean, you'll use it briefly and you'll realize the limitations. The reason they sell you a kit lens is for beginning still photographers. It is not for video, it's not for a filmmaker. Those will not go beyond a few weeks to a month's worth of your time, so do not buy a kit lens. Buy a camera, then pick a lens that you want to use that's going to last for you.
I always say it's like buying a Ferrari with, you know, like a Mazda motor or something. It doesn't make sense. It might look nice on the surface, but the result is not what you expect.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't add up. And it's the heart of the image. I mean, you get everything that goes onto the sensor that is recorded goes through the lens, so it's essential to have a good quality there, right? And especially with 4K, we have this 4K craziness. I think every camera released at NAB is 4K. So we have loads of people now jumping onto these cameras and buying it with a cheap lens again, just to, you know, because they need a 4K camera, but they don't realize that you very often cheap lenses can't even resolve 4K. So how do you measure 4K lenses? How does it work? Do you actually look at the image, you know, in a through a camera and analyze it when you develop a lens, or how does it work?
Let me start a little bit with 4K. What's 4K? I think this is a very important question, and I want to say some words about it, and then come back to your question. We have talked about camera and lenses, and what camera we should buy and what lens we should buy. You have always to think what is limiting performance. This is the main question. What is limiting the performance? If the camera is 4K ready, that means that your sensor has a pixel resolution in the horizontal 4096 pixels, and in the vertical 2048 pixels in the vertical, then the camera should be 4K ready. But now the question is, what is limiting? What is limiting performance? And it can be the camera, or it can be the lens. Our lenses, compact lenses, are all 4K ready. That means there is a capability to resolve all information for the sensor covering this 4,000 times 2,000 pixels. And of course, if you have lenses with such a quality, you have to measure it somehow. When you are talking about 4K and resolution and things like that and contrast, you have to think that all this world is talking about line pairs. What's line pairs per millimeter? It sounds like something very small because it's per millimeter, and indeed it's very small. If you think we have resolution, we call this resolution. What can we see in line pairs? And if you have a certain contrast for these line pairs, you have always, and you can see line pairs everywhere. Everywhere you can see line pairs, mostly on textiles. You see line pairs, and the question is, can you see this, for example?
My shirt is not really TV ready.
Yes. If you see these line pairs in the image, then you can resolve these line pairs. And if you think we are talking about 40 line pairs per millimeter, that means between a white and a black line, there is a distance of 25 microns. This is 40 line pairs per millimeter. And if you get this line pairs resolved on the image, then you can say you can resolve 40 line pairs. And if you talk about 4K, the resolution you have to resolve is around 70 line pairs per millimeter. So it's a huge resolution, and not all lenses can resolve this line pair density. So we can all call our lenses 4K ready because they can resolve this resolution of around 70 line pairs per millimeter. And if the camera is also 4K ready, this resolution is transferred in the image chain through the camera to the image. So you can measure this very, very simply. You have a lot of methods to measure line pairs per millimeter. We call it MTF, modulation transfer function. It's pure from the mathematical point of view. You can see this resolution very simply if you have a precision projector and a DIA film with a model on it with a certain picture, and if you project this picture on a screen and you have in your object these line pairs per millimeter, these density lines, if you can see them in the projected image, you can say you can resolve it. This is the simplest test you can use.
So instead of a camera, you put this little image behind the lens and throw light through it, right?
Yes.
You don't use a camera?
No, you don't. You can use a camera as a second method. But the simplest method is with the projector. You are using it in reverse, so you are projecting an object with this line pairs you want to check on a screen. And if the lens is behaving in quality, then you can see these line pairs on the screen. If you can see it, then you cannot resolve, or your eyes cannot resolve it. You can resolve the line pairs if the difference, if the contrast has a value of more than 20%. This is the difference between dark and white in the image. If this difference is smaller than 20%, then the eyes cannot resolve this image anymore. You see everything gray. It's the difference between white and dark. And if the distance is small, both colors, both are nearing gray. So if you cannot resolve, both are gray, so you cannot see them. Mm-hmm. You cannot see them separate.
So that's very interesting. So it's very scientific, but also, it's basically like a projector, like anybody. You know, what do you use? It's and can you check? I mean, many of the less expensive wide lenses, you mentioned it, like 15 millimeters, it's very often a problem that there's distortion at the edges. And I think you probably can also check the distortion because yes. The lines should stay straight.
Yes,
right?
Yes. You have in the object, this is a standard object. So you have vertical and horizontal lines, also circles. You have lines in different densities. And it's always, there is a figure, there's a number near these line pairs. So you can see what line pairs you can see and what line pairs you cannot see. Line pairs you can resolve or line pairs your eyes cannot resolve. And then you can judge about the quality of the image by a visual check. And this is the most simple. Again, you need a high quality projection system. And when I say quality, I mean you have to focus your object precise. This is the only condition, because you have to simulate the situation from the camera where your lens is in very focus to the sensor. So you have to simulate the situation. So that means you have to adjust focus in the projection, so you have to move the object to the lens so that the object is in focus.
Okay,
that is a capability your projection system has to have.
So Barry, you're a filmmaker, and I guess you've probably worked with 4K. Do you think it's a fad like 3D was, or is it staying? Is it here to stay?
I would say yes and yes. It's not a fad. It's here to stay. The question is, will it be that of a Laserdisc? Are we going to just jump over that at some point? Resolution's going to keep growing. I would say that most of my projects I'm on are still probably 50% 720. You know, most are 1080. And every project I've worked on that shot in 4K, they always down-res and do post in 2K or less. So the rush to 4K is great. It's here. I tell people, prepare for it. And it's one of those things, if you're a filmmaker, if you're buying or acquiring gear, you have to have a plan. Because if you buy a 4K camera, your lenses need to resolve, you need to have a faster computer, you need faster hard drives, more hard drives. So it's not something that you kind of just willy-nilly, hey, I got an extra couple $1,000, a new camera came out, let's start shooting. It's a bigger investment in that. But to me, I don't get caught up in the technology. I try to get caught up in creating images and then getting those images out to the actual end public. And there is very, very, very few outlets for people to watch 4K right now. So most people that do it for fun. They buy a 4K monitor and they watch it at their house and bring over their friends. But it's not really a tool yet for me that I'm making money on. So I'm focusing on the things that I like creating and creating those for clients or for myself that I'm enjoying. So 4K is here, it's gonna stay. But it's not by any means a standard, and I don't know if by the time everything catches up, if we will actually leapfrog 4K. I made a joke yesterday, I'm like, well, everybody's got a 4K camera, so who's going to be the first that comes out with a 16K camera? You know, if you're at 8K, it's just going to be a race now, like the pixel density on sensors were a few years ago.
So apart from the Compic Primes, Compic Zooms, you have a new special project, I would say, which is more kind of a niche, but became popular over the past few years. Mm. It's the anamorphics. We all, I think the filmmaking world was exposed to a lot of anamorphic hype with J.J. Abrams' lens flares, I guess. You know, the lens flares that he uses in all his films to, you know, he exaggerates it a bit, in my opinion. So I think there's a little bit of a misconception of what anamorphics are and what they should look like. I don't know, Michael, do you want to say something about and explain to our audience what anamorphics actually are? What is the advantage of using an anamorphic? Why would you use it as opposed to a normal lens?
I think I'm not the right guy to explain that. From a sales point of view, I think it's a new trend. Again, a trend which is coming back, I would say. It's replaced the 3D trend also. If you look at the NABs of the past years, 3D was the hype on every single booth. And the industry was somehow going towards 3D. But now we can see a trend to a new look, to this anamorphic look. And I think we've been able to develop a very high performing lens line. And we showed the seventh lens already here at NAB in Las Vegas. So we have a seven lens set ready for the market. But the technical explanation, I would hand over to the specialist who actually developed the lenses. Yeah. So
what is an anamorphic then?
So
why would you use it?
Let me tell you a little bit history. I saw my first anamorphic film in the 70s as a child. I was fascinated. You have to wear these glasses, these special glasses, also at that time. And I was very fascinating, and at that time I didn't understood why do you need anamorphic. Now we have a larger view about this issue. And at that time, people wanted to see a widescreen, wanted to have a widescreen cinema. And for this widescreen, you need a wide format. And in the early 20s, some scientists came up with a very good idea. Why not save film, to compress the image? To compress the image, so to use the same format, but with a larger object field, with a larger field of view, and compress the image. And in the cinema, just decompress it, just de-squeeze it, by the same factor, so that you have the original image but large.
So just to explain, that means if you wouldn't use anamorphics to get a wide image, you would have to have really big black bars printed on film, like as you used to, and now recorded on the sensor. But an anamorphic just still records like a stretched image,
yeah,
and then it's recompressed when projected in the cinema.
You are right.
So you have a higher vertical resolution.
I'll add one thing to that. You're also keeping the resolution the same. So if you're going to crop, you know, take a regular 24 by 36 millimeter sensor and crop it off, you're losing the resolution, where an anamorphic lens pushes all in there. So when it's de-stretched, you have the full resolution of that sensor and not throwing away data, which is critical in today's time.
It was from the very beginning our goal to make a new class of anamorphic lenses. You have a lot of anamorphic lenses on market today, and also old ones and new ones, but we thought we have to do something very different. And as I said in the very beginning, our philosophy was and is still to have lenses with very, very good image properties. This was for the anamorphics. We have changed this philosophy. We have a new goal to have a lens with a very special bouquet. We call it bouquet. And what's bouquet? Bouquet is very simple to explain, but it's hard to create. Bouquet is how objects which are not in focus are seen on image. So all objects which are not in focus. What's their appearance in image? And it was our goal to make this anamorphics very special with this feature, to have a very, very special, I don't want to call it look, because look is something some companies are using, and it's very hard to explain how they are dealing with this look, but we call it, it's a feature. It's a very unique way of thinking, of dealing with images which are not in focus. You cannot make this this special bouquet with spherical lenses. You have to have these anamorphics, and you have to deal with the property of these anamorphics, that you have two lenses, two focal lengths in one lens. You have vertically and horizontally different focal lengths by a factor of two. The focal length is shorter in the horizontal direction, so that you have a larger field of view in the horizontal direction. And the image is quite quadratically. So you have to squeeze the lens is squeezing the image in the horizontal direction by a factor of two. So keeping it on the same sensor, and because you have to use cylindrical elements for making these two focal lengths in one lens, you are getting very unique image features for objects which are not in focus. We call this phenomenon astigmatic image, in contrast to the stigmatic image, which means we have one point image for one point object. In an astigmatic image, you have for one point object, you have 2 points image, which are in a certain distance one from another. And it's very important how to deal with these distances between these image points for the same object points. And that makes the bouquet, the objects which are not in focus, very unique. Of course, the objects which are in focus, you have one image point for one object point, it's in focus. It's very clear and very sharp. But what's not in focus has a special effect on you.
So for example, I think highlights are oval.
The oval highlights are a phenomenon which is coming with this squeezing and this squeezing of the image. You can recognize every anamorphic film because of these highlights. But what is very important, and what's the very, very amazing with these lenses, are the bouquets not on night scenes, on daylight, because then you can see the background and how the objects in focus are separated from this background, mm-hmm. And this is very unique. On images taken at night time, you see of course these oval highlights, but this was all, because the rest is dark. This bouquet is coming into your attention very, very hard on daylight, when you separate, as said, the objects from which are in focus from the rest of the world, and this is unique. Check it out.
But lens flares are not always horizontal, like in J.J. Abrams films, or is this?
No, I think this was coming. We have the design philosophy for this new anamorphics is to spread the cylindrical lenses through the lens, so to make them very compact on the first time, on the second time, to have a very, very compact design and a very good image. Not to have a lot of cylindrical lenses. We do not want to have a lot of cylindrical lenses, because cylindrical lenses are not rotationally symmetric and are hard to align. We have all technological possibilities there, but with manufacturing errors, you have to reduce your number of lenses in general and the number of cylindrical lenses. So these horizontal lines and all these flares coming in, you can see them, but you can also put, you have nothing in what you don't want. If you want to have something, you can put it also in the past, increases your possibilities to shape your image after your wishes.
Yeah. So to finish this session, let's talk about one special project that you brought along, a new little thing, a new little add-on. You want to say something about it?
Yeah, it's here on the table. We have a motor, a control, which can be used on our zooms. Here we brought with us the 28-80, which is the mid zoom. We also have a 70-200 compact zoom and a new 15-30, which we show here at NAB in Las Vegas. The thing is that it's becoming more and more popular to use motorized control with zooms. And we're showing this concept study here at the show to get feedback from our customers. First of all, if we offer the right features with this tool, and also to get an understanding what we should add, for instance. The big advantage is you can use this control not only on one lens, it's not fixed on one lens. You can invest in one motor and use it on all three zooms. You just de-click this tool over here, and then you can use the motor on the three lenses.
So it's perfect for TV applications, broadcast, because right. We see more. I do more and more work for TV with, I mean, I only shoot on Super 35 for full frame cameras, I mean, 99%. And when TV channels call me up, they usually want me to shoot on bigger sensor cameras, but what's really missing is a zoom rocker very often, especially for documentary purposes. It's just useful. I mean, not that I want to change, you know, I don't want to zoom while I'm shooting. I just don't like the style, but it still, it saves you time and it makes everything more efficient if you have a zoom rocker on your lens.
Yeah, so. And you cannot only, you know, change the zoom, but also the iris, and we have an optional, an option for changing the focus. So
nice.
You can use this equipment also on a crane, so when you
perfect.
Don't touch the lens.
So you don't need a remote follow focus anymore.
Right, exactly.
So
I think it's a very versatile and flexible solution.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're confident to develop this concept study in the end.
Great. So where can people find you if they are at NAB?
Our customers can find us at NAB in the Central Hall at booth number 9042.
Okay, so it's hard to miss, I think.
Hard to miss. You can look for the blue logo on the white ground, so it should be possible to find, yeah.
So thanks, guys. Thanks for the session. Thanks also to not only to Zeiss, but also to our other sponsors. First and foremost, B&H, who also supplied all the equipment that we use here for the live show, or for the recording of this show. Also thanks to Vitec Videocom and Tools on Air. And see you in the next episode of On the Couch. Thank you.